Hello, dear friends, and welcome to another episode of Life of Love, where we explore creativity, love, curiosity, and joy. And today I'm so excited to introduce, and I think she was born to be a guest on Life of Love because her name is Tanya Gioia. And so she's just a kindred spirit for me because we love to be there and help and show our love. And she has a story about her open heart, and sometimes it can get you in trouble to be so loving. And so she's going to share her story and her journey and just help us grow in curiosity and self-care. I mean, part of living in love is taking care of yourself so you can be the best person to love and show that. So Tanya, thanks for being here. I appreciate your time and reaching out to me.
Well, Julie, I really appreciate it. Life of Love was what caught my attention. And I thought, oh, this is somebody that I really want to listen to. If your listeners haven't heard, you have an episode on joy that involves a bunch of people working together, and it is fantastic. They help you define it, talk about it. So it's just a couple episodes back. So go listen to that one. It's fantastic. But Gioia is my married name, and I married into a wonderful family, and you can be a good man and a pirate at the same time. as we got into this, as we started to figure out who we were and what we wanted in life, there were some woundings that cropped up, and that really changed me for the better. And that's where I start talking with people, is there's a reason that you're in a relationship where both of your co-addictions are really bubbling to the surface. And God had a plan, and it was an amazing plan, not the plan that I would have asked for, but an absolutely amazing plan.
It's so well said. Because when you care and love for somebody, there's an attraction it's eternal. And it's so obvious because you meet the person, you're like, this is my person. And you just know, right? And then you look back 10 years and you're like, would I have picked him now that I know what I know? You know, and I think that's like one of those things, like, how do you know something deep in your soul that they're the person that you're going to commit? Because it's galactic. It's something in the stars, and it gets a little gooey. It gets a little, you know, there's sometimes the rubber hits the road, right? And I think there's certain benchmarks or flag posts that you live in Colorado. So you guys have, you know, when you're going down the mountain, there's different checkpoints, right? So I think there's certain checkpoints, and I can say them in my marriage, the different checkpoints, but, you know, give my audience and myself some insight as to, like, the hard times where you said a pirate.
A good man and a pirate. And I steal that from Pirates of the Caribbean, where the character of Captain Jack Black looks at the other main character and he said, yeah, your dad was a pirate and he was a good man. And I think we all have those key components in it. And one of the things that I believe is that marriage is the union that's as close to the divine as you're going to get. There's a different love between parent and child than there is between two spouses. And I walked into this marriage, I thought, with my eyes open. And as I began to get into it, I went, wow. My own issues, my own controlling issues, my own dependency issues, my own need to have a very tight relationship caused me to step into one that was going to be healing, but we had to travel through a lot to get there. And to keep this story shorter and more interesting, not only were we out on 20 acres in Colorado, in the middle of December, with high snow, with three and 5 year old little boys, a dog, two horses, and 400 chickens. 400 chickens in the winter in Colorado, trying to keep them alive as well. My husband had read Defense of Food by Joe Pollard, and it was just something that he wanted to do. He was ready to go ahead and do that. So we had all these chickens, and we go to a Christmas party. And my need to control everything and say I can handle it, I will make it work, it will all be okay, had risen to the ceiling. And his substance use disorder had increased. So I want to be very clear with your audience. I was as sick, if not sicker, than he was, in the way that I was manipulating people, controlling people, making sure things went my way to keep myself safe, or what I thought was safe. God and I had been having a conversation for a while, and he had been saying, let go, let go.
Even saying let go can be triggering. I mean, it's not like, I mean, if these things are part of your being, just dealing with them once isn't enough. It always comes back. And you always, like, for me, I was a control freak too. And I was like,
I am. I've noticed that. That is, there's a physical tendency of that.
Holding on so tight to my marriage. And then I realized, you know, you love something, you let it go. And that kind of thing is just freeing. And you give the other person power to show up because you're not micromanaging everything.
And you said it. I wasn't giving him the dignity to be an adult. I was parent. You know, I had appropriate people to parent. They were 3 and 5 years old. I need to be parenting these guys. But I was parenting him too and had taken over this martyr, righteous older brother, I know better than you role, which if you're in a marriage, I doubt that that's the marriage you want. But my fear was so high, not necessarily because of what he was doing, but because of things that I couldn't control. If I can't make you do what I need you to do, then I can't be safe. That's not an adult partnership. Each partner should be autonomous, and it's two wholes coming together to form something even better. So we came home from a Christmas party that his, he had been working at a bar at that time. They had put it on. There had been a lot of drinking. I was already in a very shaken state, and I go to grab the kids from my friend's house. And she says, do you just want to stay here? You're already upset. You're already crying. Do you just want to stay here and not go home? And I'm like, no, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. I'll get them all to bed and I'll go to bed and everything will be fine. And I didn't expect anything to happen. Here's where God says, oh, I've got a different plan for you. So I want to back up a minute. And I always tell this part of the story. Things were happening that I was part of that I created. So if we back up a couple weeks earlier, we had been in such a physical struggle outside in the snow that literally, Julie, and people need to hear this, I was crazy enough that had there been a weapon, I would have killed him. I was that angry. I was not processing my emotions. I was not working with my God. I was working against everything God was trying to do with me, and I would have killed him. He's bigger and stronger than I am, and so he gently laid me down in the snow. I called my sponsor, and she said, Tanya, the last thing your children need is one dead parent and one in prison. You will not do this again. You know how far you could take it. Stop. So I hope everybody has somebody in their life that they can call and confess to and say, I scared myself. I went beyond something that I would ever think about doing. So if you play this forward and we've come home from this Christmas party, we were locked, and it was a verbal nightmare. I got the kids to bed. I did what I needed to do, but we were up and down the stairs and yelling and screaming. And you can just imagine what was going on. That happened most of the night. At some point I reached out for help. Now I'm in the Colorado mountains. No help came. We don't have cell signal. Nothing's happening. So my girlfriend finally gets the text. She comes the next morning. If anybody's been involved in domestic violence, you know somebody is leaving with the police at that point in time. And my husband, the hero, people really need to hear this, the hero said, I'll go. I'm going. So that started a long chain of events, but it started a long chain of events of healing. That was the breaking point that began to heal. He got sober that night. I reached out to therapists immediately. I started what I will say is probably the best program that I have ever done. It's not even on the market anymore. It's called Wounded by Shame, Healed by Grace by Jeff Van Vonderen. And if you can find it, pick it up, because it really brings home that the family has a lot to do with this. I didn't create these issues for my husband, nor did he create the issues for me. But had we continued that way, Julie, can you imagine how my kids would have turned out? Can you imagine the strife that we were creating? Just all of the tension and aura. So I am very proud, pleased, and it is only by the grace of God that at the end of this month we celebrate 20 years. And that's 20 years of hard work.
Oh, I love, there's so much I love that you've said. And it just, you know, it, from what you're describing, you were operating in such a masculine energy before shit hit the fan. And, you know, and we all have masculine in us and feminine, but when you're so heavy in one, then something's got to hit the fan. And sometimes we just need to run into that wall. And it sounds like the angels are looking out for you guys, that, you know, that you had friends and the resources and the things showed up. I did want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, getting what you want. Sometimes you get exactly what you want. You sign up for something. And can you speak on that? Because your husband, you know, got sober and then dynamics changed, right?
Absolutely. So here's what we found in the work we've been doing since then is marriages don't end prior to. They end after sobriety, which people look at me and think, that's really odd. You got what you wanted, right? Well, yes and no. There was a shift, and a shift that needed to take place, but now I don't have my role anymore. And talking about the masculine is the truth. You know, I could bring it home, fry it up in a pan and still make you believe you're a man, but I couldn't because I was the man. I was taking care of all those things. Yes, he's a hard worker and he was going to work, but I was taking care of everything because he couldn't do it right. He couldn't do it the way I wanted. So that masculine energy was there. Nobody was being the woman.
Yeah.
Kind of a hard relationship. No feminine energy in there. And so I get what I want. And then I call the therapist we had used before, and he said, I can't work with you until the court order has ended for 12 months. I'm like, we won't have a marriage after 12 months. And then I go to the church and they say, well, we're willing to support you. And they did surround us and they did support us, but we didn't have a Celebrate Recovery. We didn't have, there wasn't a real understanding. In fact, we helped found one there. There wasn't a real understanding of what was happening. And then I worked at a salon at that time. I go to the salon and they're like, girl, you deserve better. You should just go on. You should do this. So I really had to come back to me and get clarity from my higher power, from who I was, who my soul was. That's the other episode that I really like, is when your soul was downloading for you that what you're afraid of, which is frustrating you, is the path you should go on. So that's where I really had to, it's really hard. I even had to shut out my parents. My parents said, bring the boys, come down to Texas, live with us. We'll take care of it. We'll buy you a house. We'll do whatever you need to do. And when people around you do that, it's because they love you and they are frightened for what's going on. When they see you hurting, they hurt. They want to stop the hurt. So whatever way they figure they can fix it, they're ready to do that. So please, families, hear that. I know that they did it out of love. But here's the key. This was a point, and I was no spring chicken. I mean, I had that second one at 39, so I was in my early 40s. as much as I'd been praying for this to happen, when it happened, I realized I had no idea who I was and what I wanted and what was next and what was best for me. And I have all these voices telling me that. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. And it gets down, you know, that's the big question is so many of us have never been asked what makes you happy. That's not a question because it's sort of indulgent.
Well, what I was looking for was more my authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm speaking to the choir when I talk to all the moms out there is we're willing to die for our child, to give up for our child, whatever we need for our child. But I had never really found who I was first. So I was giving from such a dry well that my children weren't benefiting. My husband certainly wasn't benefiting. When you meet him at the door every night with a double hipper going, where have you been? What have you been doing? What do I need to take care of? You know, that's not a relationship. It's that this is what I work with my clients is if you're coming from that dry well place where you're not using any self-care, self-compassion, and you're giving it all away, we become our own worst enemy. And then what do you do?
Right. And it's so hard to put on the brakes because you get stuck in these roles. You get stuck in these, it's almost like a script.
It is a script. It is a script. And that's what I mentioned earlier is, okay, so my job prior to this was to, you know, get the family to church, get the kids to school. I had a part-time job. I was working in a salon, make that happen, make friends, make community, all those types of things. Hopefully do some nice things for my husband, which I've kind of quit doing for the last year or two. But, you know, doing all those things, that was my job. Now, all of a sudden, I can't make it look right because we're in the paper. Everybody knows I needed to reach out for help. So that's gone. We had a 23-month separation. So taking care of him and running the household like that, that's gone. Neither one of us can afford to stay in the house that we're in. That's gone. And then I'm looking around going, okay, we've got sobriety, but every piece of my stability just walked away. I didn't have enough of a job to support the kids at that point. And so every piece of my stability walked away. And although I had been praying for this and praying for this, I got back down on my knees and said,
what now?
What do I do now? That's when I had this whole conversation. And that's when there was really that connection piece of surrender, of this is in your life because you are not the center of the universe. You know, we think the person with the addictive behaviors is being the center of the universe. And if they would just get well, all would be okay. No, I needed to get well too. Because I saw myself as a center of the universe. Mm-hmm. And why not me? Why not for me? Why can't this happen? Da, 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 da. It was a whiny self-pity mess. I wouldn't have wanted to live with me.
And it was easy to be a victim. You're everyone's hero and the victim because you're doing everything. I hear you. And it's an easy thing to get into when you don't know your authentic joy. When you don't know how to connect to your self-care and you think you're the center of the universe.
Well, and Julie, maybe you've had this experience of how well can I do the dance so I get the hug, right? That performance piece. Because that's what I heard when you were doing that solo episode was stop performing and take hold of these things that are in front of you. Because honestly, I could say, and I could still say now, it took me a little while, but about 20 months into it, I was thankful that this has happened. I wouldn't have paid attention. Apparently, I wouldn't have paid attention any other way. And I was thankful not only for, you know, I just gave you a snapshot of an instantaneous piece, but for all the things we had been through to get there, you know, that this was a wake-up call for how I treated other people. And here I am raising two boys. I'm raising somebody else's mm-hmm. husband. Am I going to raise them to be manipulated?
Dependent.
And dependent mm-hmm. and all those things?
Yeah.
No. I want them to be godly young men.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. And it's... like it, that is such a feminine principle, that surrender and to know that you're worthy just because you're here. And I sound like a broken record. I know I do. But if you can really hold on to that idea that you're a divine person and you're here and you don't have to prove anything to anybody, you really don't. Because you're enough.
Getting me to surrender was like, I am hanging on to the wall doing this. And I'd been doing this for years. So you can imagine, I'm exhausted. I'm spiritually, mentally, and physically exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I have these two people who really need a mommy. And I'm like, okay, finally gave up. And life mm-hmm. got better. And that's the thing that I'm glad you're repeating that, because that's one of the things that I tell people I work with, is you're creative, resourceful, and whole, just as you are. Whether you do anything or not, you are just as you are, which is incredible if you can take hold of it. But if you're stuck in performance love, then you have to keep performing and you have to do perfectionist things and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And you're just going to wear out.
And then you can't see, you have trouble seeing when there's problems and you're frustrated. Part of the whole thing is understanding that there's something you did to create this conflict. And you mentioned it before, like you had set the stage. It was just a matter of when everything was going to blow up. And to take that ownership and that responsibility that, you know, even it'll happen like in different things. Like say you have an appointment and the other person doesn't show up. And you can easily say, oh, well, that person's irresponsible or they're disorganized or, you know, what about, you know, your role? Maybe you didn't send a reminder email, or maybe you really didn't want to meet with them anyway, but it's easier for you to blame them for not showing up. You know, it's like this, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm being clear, but it's this perspective. Cause like sometimes if I get stood up or, you know, something doesn't work out, I'll be like, oh, I just, you know, it's 15 minutes and they're not here. I get to go outside and, you know, throw the ball for my dog or pull the weeds out of my flower bed that's been bugging me. Or, you know, there's certain things I just love to do if I have an extra half hour. So I'm like, I get some free time. You know what I mean? I'm going to go shopping. I'm going to go pick out a new blouse or something. You know, I don't care. It's not that I don't care, but I will no longer be like, that person, oh my gosh, there's no energy for that. Like it's like the state of grace where you can be accepting that person, you know, something might have come up, or maybe they got into an accident, or, you know, you can go down that path of, you know, whatever, you know, the scenarios. And I definitely follow up with people just to see if they're okay. But, and you know, I don't, people need to respect my time eventually. But the thing is, it's not about being a victim and that person did this to your schedule. It's like, no, the universe gave me some extra time. You know what I mean? It's like this paradigm shift where you're wanting, you have grace and you're going to extend that grace to other people. And life just gets so much more joyful.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I had to learn, is this is not happening to me. It is happening for me. And yes, boundaries are important. Like you said, if this is a repeat and you know, this is going to happen, boundaries are of course important, but also what did this open up? It's so beautiful. What you just said is, did this open up that I get to go for a walk? Did this open up that I get to complete a task that I think I wasn't going to get to today? What did this open up? And it's taken me a long time to see it that way, because I was totally consumed with the other instead of going, you know what? they can probably manage a lot better without me trying to control them. Mm.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, I'm holding space for that because it's not an easy thing, and you had a lot of responsibilities with all those chickens and the horses.
With all the chickens, yeah, that was... thank goodness for some farmers around us who came and took the chickens, because we just... At that point, it's almost like you're standing naked in front of your whole community. You're kind of like, okay, we need help. And I'm so glad there are lots of services now that there weren't then, that there's a better understanding. We have come a long way in the understanding around substance use disorder, around any type of addiction. We've come a long way at looking at, okay, people use substances, people use food, people use workaholism because it works, not because it doesn't work. So it works until it doesn't work. And then you really have to deal with the pain. And that's what I would really encourage your audience members to look at is before you put 6 cookies in, and I'm guilty, what is it that you're really feeling? You know, are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired? Are you afraid? Is there some big something that you're just pushing away? What is that? That's why your soul conversation is so great. Okay. There's stuff going on here. Let's figure out what that is. It's super important.
When you're uncomfortable, your body's telling you something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that I have trouble with boundaries all the time, and I have to like see the signs and be like, okay, this is too much, because I like to do, and I will do to exhaustion, and then try to blame someone else for disregarding my state when I need to be in charge of my own state, you know, like, and it's something that always cycles, because I just want to get stuff done, and so I have huge compassion for people who get frustrated and feel strung out. And it is a balance. It's self-care. And, you know, there's times where your kids have homework and you got to stay up late helping them because, you know, they can take the precedent. But, you know, it's like that whole idea that you can sneak a nap in, like figure out what, you know, maybe it's a cup of tea, maybe it's some raspberry tea or just something simple that you can just shut it down for a minute and then just, you know, be present.
And maybe it's 5 minutes worth of breathing. Maybe it's getting into, so why am I in this state? Why am I feeling dysregulated? And again, the surrender piece of sometimes you do need the nap. Sometimes you need to say no. We have a hard time saying no and not meeting people's expectations. But in the reality of things, unless you truly are a surgeon and so you need to be there, most of us, there are other people who can cover for us, who can take on that responsibility, or it doesn't need to be done. You know, it doesn't need to be homemade cupcakes that you take to your child's homeschool room. You can walk into the Publix, the Kroger's, or the whatever, buy them and take them over there. I can tell you, the kids are going to be just as happy. What they're not going to be happy with is if you're snippy, angry, and, you know, really destructive when they come home in the evening. That's hard to deal with because you're dysregulated. And I found this to be true with family. If you're dysregulated, the whole family knows, and they're going to do whatever their coping skill is to deal with that.
It's so, so wise. So do you have your clients or do you have a practice of getting back to your core values or your, because to me, it's like, if you have your family core values of maybe it's peace in the house, maybe it's having nutrients, or, you know, like, because to me, like, having a good meal is really a priority. So I'm going to make sure that I take the time to go to the grocery store or find what I need to make. You know, I might not know what I'm going to make for dinner every night, but it's really important that time with my family, we can sit and talk. And so there's certain things that are a priority. And then it's easier for me to let the fluff go. But you have to really spend the time to figure out what your value is. And maybe it's meeting with the whole family and saying, what is it most important, that we laugh together or that we get chores done? So maybe the counters are messy, but we had fun playing a game. I don't know. Like, it's up to the family, right? Like, what's your core?
It is. And each family is unique. And when you bring two parents together, they're coming from family of origin, right? So their family did it this way and their family did it this way. So with my clients, I do a lot of work around their values and then ask them to, we've got a couple little quizzes and things, then ask them to take that to their spouse and ask if they'll do it. It isn't, remember, I'm the control freak, so I'm not going to force you to do it. Ask if they'll do it. And if they will, that's great. If not, then have some conversations, especially after something has just happened. You know, so I had one family that the mom was saying, I'm just done with doing housework. And the kids were little bitty and people could take care of it. So, you know, different age, different stage. But we worked together and she asked each person, what's most important to you? What is it that keeps things moving in your mind? And what are you willing to do? So they came around to the fact that really nobody cared about their personal space and that everybody could leave their personal space however they wanted. And that this whole clean room, everybody has to have the clean room mythology is mythology for them. That was
I love that mythology. It's programming.
It's programming. You decide. You decide what works for you. And then it came, the husband said, you know, really what's important to me is that the kitchen is clean enough that I can work in. That doesn't mean it's spotless, but it means that things are put away and, you know, the counters are reasonably clear and all that stuff so that when I come to make a meal, I don't have to spend 30 minutes doing that. So they took that kind of as the crux of the middle of it. Okay. We all like being in the kitchen. We all like to cook. Again, older kids. We all like to cook, throw in a pizza or whatever. So if we move things from the sink to the dishwasher, it's all okay. And then they kind of went, okay, so personal space, you do what you want. Then they kind of went, okay, living room. If people could take their personal things to their personal space, throw them in the personal space. Do whatever you want with that. But living room stays kind of clear. And then the woman I was working with said, well, the bathrooms have to be.
That was her thing, yeah.
So that's where they came down to a negotiation. But other than that, there was no, okay, we need to dust and everything has to be vacuumed like this and the pillows have to be fluffed and straightened and all those things. That's it's kind of like when people get in the vans or they do those things, they really pare down their clothes. They pare down the extras. They have one pot that does everything for them. And so this family really said, okay, we're not trying to impress the neighbors. We don't need it to look like something out of a magazine. So these are the things that are important to us. Keep the kitchen clean. Personal space is your space. And throw your stuff in your personal space rather than leaving it in the living room. And all she really had to do was take care of the bathrooms. It lightened her load by 3 or 4 hours. That's huge.
It's huge. And it's just having an honest conversation. And when you don't communicate, when you don't have an honest conversation, things become these huge grizzly bears. Yes. And it could be a cute little teddy bear that you just sort of fluff up and say, oh, you're cute. But if you don't talk about it, it grows and festers and you create all these situations in your head that don't even exist.
And that's what happens with families with addiction is you're told not to see what's really happening. You're told what you did see is not really happening. You're told not to feel the way you feel because that didn't really happen. And so we did both have to work through our particular addictive behaviors to get to a point where we could make common decisions. And one of those was having a budget together. That took us many years to come into finances together. So it's not simple, or it's not easy, but it is simple. There are very basic steps to do this. And like you said, the first part is really that clarity and then respecting myself enough to keep to my boundaries and respecting you saying, I could blame you because that takes the heat off of me. But if I do that, then I have to justify why I'm blaming you. And then I have to make you an it. And then I have to say, you're not worth it. And then, you know, we just go in the spiral.
It's a vicious cycle. Oh, I bet your boys are just amazing teenagers now. Are they grown now?
I have one that just graduated from high school, and he's doing a gap year working and sorting out what's next. And then I have one that's still in high school. I mean, they were three sporters. We ski in the winter, dirt bike in the summer. My husband was so brilliant. He said, the more we can keep them outside, the less we're going to keep them on their digital. If you're not on camera looking at this,
I'm doing DS playing. Remote control. PlayStation.
So that activity is, I don't know about girls because I don't have any girls, but boys, especially as they hit that teenage years,
they need it. They need to feel the exhaustion, the satisfaction of competing, of showing up, the discipline. There's so many levels to that, to sports. And, you know, I honor that. And I was so happy that I grew up in a household where everyone did some sports, and it kept me in line. Cause I tell you what, if you party and then you go and try to run a cross country race, you're going to look like you're going to hurt. It's
like, not even party, but my youngest will not during seasons. He will not drink soda. He will not eat a bunch of sugar. You know, he'll have maybe a cookie now and again, but he's very conscious that lowers his ability, which is the same thing that any substance use will do. I mean, food is a substance use too. But the other thing I want to share with your audience is we brought them along on this journey. They are very aware that now we did appropriate things for the age, but Betty Ford Clinic has a children's program that is phenomenal and talks about separating the person from the disease. They use a disease model for the addiction. Talks about you can love the person and hate the disease. So we brought them along from a very young age doing that. We've brought them to the AA Al-Anons. We brought them to Celebrate Recovery. We've made it very clear that, hey, when my oldest was 17, he was dealing with some stuff, and we looked at him and we said, we are not exactly sure what to do here. We've never had a 17-year-old. You know, let us get with our sponsors, our spiritual directors, our counselors. Let us talk this out. You think about it. We're going to come back and meet about it again. Just those skills alone allowed us the humbleness to go, we don't know. We don't have an answer here, but we can find an answer. We can show you how to find an answer. So I highly, highly recommend really getting in touch with what you talk about on your show all the time of who you are, who's the authentic person you want to be, and to set the attentions around the family. Because here's the biggest key. Families do not get sick on purpose, but they do get well intentionally. So you may have brought these bad habits, and your spouse may have brought some bad habits, and then you created some habits, and then you've created these other things. And you know as well as I do, it's like the 5 pounds. It's 5 pounds, then it's 10 pounds, then it's 20 pounds. It just kind of sneaks up on you, and suddenly you've got a mess.
Yeah.
So the more intentional you can be about, we talked about earlier, what are your family values? What is exciting to you? You know, we're a family that camps and dirt bikes and enjoys skiing, and we're outdoors, and you're not going to find baby dolls and cuddling and, you know, all those things here. We hug, but it's not the same as when you have a different style of family.
And it's okay. It's okay to not define yourself, to shift when it's time, or, you know, you don't have to burrow into a stereotype. And that's the beautiful thing about family to me is, you know, just knowing that you have this core group that's going to love you no matter what. If you're being a bitch, you can be like, you know, I'm sorry. I was frustrated, and I'm going to do better. I'm going to learn from this. And, you know, like you said, separating the person from the behavior. I don't like what you did, but I still love you. And you don't have to perform for me, because I'm going to love you no matter what. You're going to have to be responsible for your choices. Like, I'm not going to bail you out. And I had a guest on, she talked about the lawnmower parent, and you guys sort of resonate the same message as, you know, you got to let them have their mistakes and just know, but that unconditional love of the Betty Ford, like, I'm going to love you. And and you're my son or you're my husband, and I'm going to love you no matter what. I'm not going to let you hurt me. We're not going to be dysfunctional because, you know, that's enabling. But yeah, it's a really cool lesson to learn if you've grown up in a house that's based on approval and competition. And sometimes you just have to see it because you don't see the things right in front of your face because they're so normal to you. But the things that are the most normal mm-hmm. to you are often the things that you really need to look at because you don't see them.
Yes, you don't see them at all. And then you will take your, I do this a little bit, you'll take your holy self, the one with the hole in it, with the capital H, and you'll look for another person that's familiar with that hole or different holes, and you'll try and meet up like this, whereas what God really intended was two whole people with a W coming together to create something new that becomes holy, H-O-L-Y, and is lifted up. But when you're trying to get from that other person to fill whatever those broken holes are in your body, you're headed in the wrong place. And that creates shame because I can't do that for you. It creates blame because I want you to do that for me. And then it creates justification of why can't you do that for me? Because that's what I expected from you. And so setting up all of those things just leads you down that dysfunction path. So we're back again to values, authenticity, and knowing who and whose you are. It's just an amazing mm-hmm. way to go in this circle.
You know, be able to laugh at yourself, because that's when you can break through, when you can stop taking it so seriously and be like, I just did that again, didn't I? You know, just be like, oh, it. Sometimes I'll ask my kids to tell me when I'm doing, you know, something. We have a bad habit at dinner I'm not going to share because it's a family joke. But my youngest son will be like, we did it again. I'm like, oh, we did it again. Because he doesn't like a certain topic. And for some reason, this topic is, it just always ends up one way or the other. So it's really fun. And, you know, just to laugh, just to be, it's not all that serious. So that's what I would want to leave my listeners with, is try not to take everything so seriously. I mean, most of us aren't brain surgeons, and we're just trying to do our best. And sometimes you just have to mm-hmm. say, I missed, and it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, the world will spin.
I will turn to a child, or sometimes my husband, and I'll look at them and I'll say, I know you were talking to me. I heard the sound. I did not understand what you said. And it's normally because I'm completely inside my own head. I'm having my own thoughts. I know that they're talking to me, but I have totally and completely missed it. Well, me being that honest about it mm-hmm. diffuses the whole thing. They don't go away going, you never listen to me and you don't hear what I say. I'm being very honest and saying, I want to hear you. I missed that. Can you repeat it so I can really listen to what you're saying and respond?
It's a totally different situation when you do it that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I teach a 7-step process about positive communication. And one of the pieces is to take responsibility for your part in it. Mm-hmm. And there's very few situations that you are in that you didn't have a part in. Mm-hmm. And there are some serious ones that you had nothing to do with, but most of the time you had a part in it. This is for you, not to you.
So cool. I just love your work, Tanya. I appreciate all the heartfelt, you know, the experience and the reflection, and, you know, you're devoted to this, and I know you're helping lots of people. And it's not that other people aren't going to struggle, because they're still going to struggle, but there's a light. There's a place to look when you're ready to look. So, mm-hmm. you know, if anyone's listening to this and you're struggling, you know, just baby steps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things we've got going right now, if I can share, is we've got a quiz on unhelpful help, or is your help harming? And we don't do this to shame anybody. We do it so that you can be aware of maybe you are doing too much. Because that's the work that I do, is with women on being the cherished wife, doing less but connecting more, and having that generational legacy of love, laughter, God-centered connection with your family. Because the last thing you want is to raise these beautiful children and have them become estranged because they can't handle the family dynamic. So I would invite all of you to take that quiz, see where you fall. There's follow-up videos. And guess what? You get to make the choices on how you show up. Nobody else makes those choices for you. So you can change. You can live a life of love and listen to yourself.
You know, I was just thinking about that because, you know, if you're having trouble taking care of your body, you're neglecting your body. If you're thinking about playing with your grandchildren one day.
Amen.
Are you going to have that bottle of wine? You know what I mean? If it makes you feel inflamed and tired, is that your best choice? Is that going to get you to play with your grandchildren one day? Is that, you know, eating the whole box of cookies? You know what I mean? It makes choices easier to make if you can have that pinnacle or that grand prize. And there's no guarantees, of course, but it can make your road so much easier if you can have your, you know, your lighthouse, your, you know, because you have to have a reason because there's so many distractions that, I mean, you just watch a football game or watch anything on TV and they're throwing pizza commercials and they're throwing, you know, sugar and wine. And oh, my gosh, it's really hard to watch TV and not want to eat.
Absolutely.
It's constant or drink. And so if you don't have your north, if you don't have your goals in mind, chances are you're going to get distracted from and just and go with the flow. And if you're depleted because you work too long or you're tired, it's just you're more impressionable. So it's just that awareness of the programming that's coming at you.
Right.
So, I think we could talk for two more hours, but I loved how you said that life, live your life of love. So I appreciate that. That was really lovely.
Absolutely. Well, you're doing awesome work. I have really enjoyed the episodes that I've listened to. I would tell everybody to go listen to the Bananas for Joy or something.
Go Bananas
for Joy. Wonderful.
Yeah. Title. That one's dear to me. It's because it's a tribute to my late father-in-law who we had trouble seeing eye to eye on so many things and I didn't understand him. But, you know, toward the end, I started just communicating better with him and we developed this harmony because I stopped being the victim. I just started enjoying his quirkiness for what he was and he loved the family. But it, you know, it's funny. It took this time where I was like, you know what? I really want to come visit you. But when you just talk about me doing the laundry and us cooking dinner, and I don't feel like you cherish my time. I'm just like a servant here. And I just laid it out. And I was like, it's most important that you get to spend time with your grandkids. And he's like, I know. And I was like, okay, well, let's get on the same team.
Awesome.
That tribute was like, he always loved bananas. If he came to my house, we had to have two bananas for grandpa. And if we went anywhere, he was taking a banana. So yeah, that was a really special episode.
What a great conversation you had and how it cleared it up. I mean, how scared were you to have that conversation?
Oh, I was so scared. And then at the end, you know, it was funny. Like my husband came over. He's like, thank you. You know what I mean? Because he was in the middle of us all the time. And once I just was honest and we got the five of us got in a circle and just put our arms around each other.
See, that's just a great example of using the seven steps of positive conversation. You stuck with one subject. You were brief. And you took responsibility for what was yours, and you spoke and you said, how can I help? How can we change this? So you probably didn't even realize completely what was going on.
Yeah, well, it took a while. So I know it's a path. And so that's why I have hope. If I can get there, anyone can.
We all say that. But it's like you said in the beginning, it's all grace. You know, it's all grace. Given the
and before we recorded that episode, I almost canceled because it was a week after he died in a tragic accident, just horrible. I was very clear when we signed on. I said, guys, I don't know if I can do this episode because I'm everywhere. And they're like, Julie, we got you. We've got you. And so they did. They held my hand and they made space for my grieving. And, you know, we talked about what happened and they're like, we've got you. And it, it was a magical episode, and I was just, I didn't cancel. I still showed up.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so it just, you know, if you come with your pure heart, with the best, highest intentions, things will work out, people.
Mm-hmm. And they were, it was for you, not to you, right? Mm-hmm. It was very mm-hmm. much for you to show up.
Well, thank you for showing up today, Tanya. I really appreciate your time and everything you're doing. And I'll put links to your quizzes. I mean, that's, it's really nice. I love how you put that together.
Well, thank you, Julie. I have really appreciated you and the work that you're doing and the life of love. And that's, yeah. that's what it's all about. Is there anything greater?
Just keep trying. Yeah, that's right. Oh, thanks again.